If we're not all in defense of 43, then what are we doing here?
Depths of Wikipedia.
You're listening to Depths of Wikipedia with Annie Rowarda and Hajin Yu.
Nick Assman.
Funny, he never married.
The Battle of the Joshes.
I thought this was a metaphor.
A place known as the body part.
This place got old man stink.
Harry Ball. It's time to invoke the first law of holes.
Oh, bodega cat!
When you're in one...
Tell us about your bike, Alaska.
Stop digging.
Doctor, what about the number of
highway hypnosis.
A ghost mall.
Press any key to continue.
Depths of Wikipedia.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Depths of Wikipedia podcast. I'm Hajin. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, bestie, admin, Annie Rowarda. How are you?
Hi, Hajin. I am doing well. As always, I'm very excited for this episode's topic. We're talking about grammatically correct sentences that don't make sense. They're these super contrived setups that you would never say in real life. And they make you question your understanding of your own language. It's like tongue twisters for your brain. And Hajin and I were seeing these TikTok comments. They kept saying normalize context. There are comments on videos that don't make sense. Normalize context. These sentences, I'll just tell you, they simply do not normalize context. But we'll try to.
Full disclosure, neither of us are linguists nor philosophers, but, you know, we might be getting into that territory. Just to dip our toe in into the, you know, wonderful world of weird sentences, I wanted to start out with, I think this is a fairly popular post, right? The goatee.
Yeah, I had heard of this before I found it on Wikipedia. But even when I posted it, a lot of people liked it and shared it.
Yeah, I liked it. So if you're not familiar, G-H-O-T-I can be pronounced like fish. So it's like the F sound in enough, and then the I in women, and then the sh in nation. So it's fish. And it just really makes you think about how truly contrived the English language is. Like, I, as like a person who didn't really have to like learn English as a second language, I feel truly blessed because, as we will see in this episode, English is really crazy.
It is. The spelling's so inconsistent. So that was just a one little word as a sample. But we'll get into some longer sentences, which are my personal favorites. Before we do that, though, I have a very short, very fun three-question quiz. Hajin, are you ready for this fill-in-the-blank?
So ready. I'm so ready to fill these blanks.
So there are a number of sentences that are somewhat famous for being in language learning textbooks, but not making sense at all. Like a sentence that you would learn in class, but absolutely never use if you were actually speaking the language. One is Italian, and I'm going to give you the English translation of it, but I want you to fill in the blank word. My tailor is blank.
Great.
Good guess, but incorrect. My tailor is rich.
Oh, interesting.
There's a French textbook that has this sentence. The quill of my,
The quill of my wife. My wife. Do you think we can afford that soundbite? My wife.
Put it in.
We'll find out. Yeah, put it in. Come at us with your cease and desist.
And then there's another sentence that's so ridiculous and so famous that it has its very own Wikipedia page. Hajin, this is definitely the hardest one. My has been struck by lightning.
Wait, can I have a hint?
It has to do with the left-hand side of a horse.
The left-hand side of a horse?
Yeah, come on.
What does that mean?
A horse's heart.
That's
been struck by lightning. Oh, so close, but wrong.
What was it?
It's a postillion. Didn't know what that was, but it's a person who rides the leading left-hand horse of a team or pair drawing a coach or carriage, especially when there is no coachman. It has its own Wikipedia page because it's so frequently taught to English learners.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you, the postillion?
Struck by lightning. Yeah, I know. Normalized
context, I like that. My horse's heart has been struck by lightning, though. I thought that was pretty quick thinking because the heart is on the left side. I don't know about horses, actually.
It was a good, I don't know. That was a good guess. It was a good guess.
Was it? Okay, well, thank you so much. I'm feeling quite confident from that quiz.
Zero so to three, but no biggie.
No biggie. What I have brought to this linguistic buffet is time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana. It's its own Wikipedia article, and it is because, like, when you first see it, you think, like, it's time flies like an arrow, and then, like, a fruit is flying like a banana. But, in fact, it could be, like, fruit flies like a banana, like the bug. So this is an example of a humorous saying or a garden path sentence or a syntactic ambiguity or wordplay, punning, double entendre, what have you. Essentially, it's just like, it's just a twist. It's like close-up magic. You were so close. You were like, you were too busy thinking about what the right hand was doing. You didn't see what the left hand was actually doing all along. I also want to point out that the Wikipedia article for this entry has a picture of a fruit fly on a banana. So I tip my hat to the Wikipedia editor who went to the trouble to find it. The thing about this sentence is that technically, like, there is no correct interpretation. Like, you could say that a fruit is flying like a banana. Other possible interpretations is, like, you should time a fly like you would time an arrow. Like, time flies like an arrow. Or you could interpret it like, time those flies like an arrow would. Like, time flies like an arrow. Or you could interpret it as, like, something called a time fly likes an arrow. Like, time flies like an arrow. It's just, like, I don't know. I remember, like, in France, my French friend told me that, like, English is just really hard because, like, the meaning can just change completely depending on where the emphasis is. And I think this is, like, a prime example just of how much the meaning can change depending on where you put the emphasis.
I was reading somewhere about the word mind. If you're talking about your mind, like your actual brain, you'll say the word for like twice as long. But if you're saying the word mind as part of a phrase, like, oh, I changed my mind, or like in that frame of mind, you say it for half the length. Like, it's just interesting how the same words can sound so different in different contexts. Don't you think?
But normalize context, though.
Normalize context. So I think time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana is one of my favorite linguistic sentences. It got so many likes, it got so many comments when I posted it, but it's probably gets the silver medal because the winner has to be buffalo. It's truly just amazing. It breaks my brain. I still really struggle to understand it, and people on Instagram just absolutely love to reshare it to their story. I looked into it quite a bit because I was just wondering, you know, like, who came up with this? And it's probably something that explains why Buffalo, New York is used so much is that it's been discussed by professors at SUNY Buffalo, and so it's possible that their bias led it to be
a little
Buffalo.
Biased.
Yes, because really what it is that you have to have a proper noun, a noun, and a verb. So Buffalo, the city of New York, Buffalo the animal, and then Buffalo, which is a in common word that means to bully. So it's like
Buffalo, the city, Buffalo. So buffalo animals from Buffalo, New York. That. Buffalo, Buffalo, Buffalo. That buffalo from the city bully.
Yeah, yeah, the Buffalo, Buffalo, Buffalo.
Yeah, they bully back, right? They buffalo the, oh, the other back. Buffalo. Okay. That the Buffalo City Buffalo. Buffalo.
Well, no, but I did see that you can actually you can there is no special like significance of the number 8. Like, you can attach as many buffalo as you want and it could make sense. And the shortest is buffalo. It's just like calling someone a buffalo, but the U is implied. So it's buffalo. This is buffalo? The article. Yeah. Buffalo. I like when I saw that line, I was just imagining like someone in gym class like dropping the ball and like someone's like buffalo. Oh, which is just so funny. Anyways,
and if anyone questions you for using that insult, just tell them all about our podcast.
And that will make you so cool, and you will not be picked on in gym class for dropping the ball.
Another thing that you can change is the word itself. So, police is a place, and so the policemen from police. That the policemen from police back. They police the police place police. So next time you need like an example sentence for something, I don't know, practicing on a keyboard, writing something in, I think you should go for it. Do police, 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 police. Or, I mean, if you're feeling more like an animal mood, buffalo, 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 buffalo.
I'm always in an animal mood.
Me too, honestly. The first time it was ever in print was in a linguistics book by Dmitry Borgman. He is a very, very interesting guy. You always wonder, you know, like, who is a person that's going to create this buffalo sentence? Like, it's so ridiculous. Like, who's going to publish this in a book? And after reading a little bit more about him, I kind of understand, like, he's got the level of quirkiness that is required. So he was an actuary. And he got his start in recreational linguistics after just absolutely killing it on a game show in the late 50s.
Recreational linguistics.
Yeah. It's called It's in the Name. And he was on, like, he had a massive streak and he won $3,800. He later quit his job to become a writer. He created the name Exxon, like the oil company, because Standard Oil split up and he was the one that was hired to create the name. I didn't really know that was a job, creating brand names. I'm not qualified, but if anyone needs a name, I would absolutely love to help you out.
That sounds so fun.
I know.
We're the people for the job.
I don't know if we're really qualified again, but we would absolutely love to help. Email hey@depthsof.com. So, back to Dmitry Borgman. He started a church later in his career, which, if your eyebrows aren't raised, you should raise them. It's called Divine Immortality Church, and it's supposedly not a cult, but it was advertised in the New York Times, Mother Jones, The Atlantic. It offered very expensive ordainment and divinity degrees. He had several hundred people join. It sounds like a pyramid scheme. It sounds like a call. It sounds, you know, rather problematic. Luckily, no one died, but, you know, still, it just makes you wonder. He had a wife and two sons, but he was known to be incredibly reclusive. He would stay in his cluttered attic for weeks at a time, working, writing, making linguistics puzzles, and overall, just an odd guy. He wrote a bunch of books about recreational linguistics, and some were published after his death. So that's Dmitry for you. The
and phrase, this is the guy who published Buffalo, 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 Buffalo for the first time.
Actually, it's Buffalo, 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 Buffalo. But yeah, I know what you mean. It's been discovered several times, and people don't know if it's one of those things that spreads through the grapevine, if it was actually discovered independently, or what. But
what do you mean discovered? It was in the mud, and they mined it like a natural ore,
right? Like an aha moment. It was, quote, independently discovered, unquote, by Steven Pinker, the science writer.
Oh my gosh, the super famous one, the philosopher, right? And among other things.
Yeah. In the 90s, he studied language a lot for his book, The Language Instinct. And he credits the phrase to his student, Annie Benghost, who is now a linguist herself at Barnard College. So who knows where buffalo came from. But overall, I mean, it doesn't make any sense at all, but I think it's fun. Every time I think about it, I have to really, like, fight myself to find any meaning in it. And I think that part is fun. Fruit flies, like a banana, is one of those ones where you are confused once and then you get it every time after that, like riding a bike. Buffalo, I think
it's just, like,
it's harder to master.
All right. Well, I know you said that you would give gold to buffalo. But I disagree with you because, in fact, I would give gold to, coincidentally, the entry I'm about to talk about, which is colorless green ideas sleep furiously. Does this mean anything to you, Annie?
No, it doesn't mean anything to me.
Wow, that is exactly what Noam Chomsky, not to be confused with Noam Chimpsky, the really smart monkey that learned sign language and other things.
Yeah, check out his Wikipedia page.
Yeah, pretty crazy as well. But yes, so Noam Chomsky created the sentence in his 1957 book, Synaptic Structures, to give an example of a sentence that is grammatically correct, but semantically nonsensical. And he did this because, like most psychologists and neuroscientists, and even now, believe that we can comprehend sentences using like a statistical mechanism. So like we understand sentences based on like a reservoir of previous experiences with words and grammar structure. But then Noam Chomsky, I almost said Chimsky because I wrote that. Noam Chomsky said that we have an internal grammar, which is, you know, like something other than just pure statistics, because we can like understand this like totally nonsensical sentence that's like statistically probably like never been uttered. I mean, obviously now it has because it has its own Wikipedia page. Come on. So, I mean, I'm going to be totally honest, like, I'm just, like, not... I had to go into, like, JSTOR to, like, figure this out, which is just quite beyond my pay grade. I went on to academickids.org to get, like, a more simple explanation, but that's, like, the limit of what... I mean, that's what I gleaned from it. And it's just, like, the difference between syntax versus semantics. Thoughts, Annie?
My only thought is that I made a TikTok about this a while ago, and I, instead of saying syntactic, I said synaptic. Synapses are the connections between neurons in your brain. Yeah, and I just was like,
were you roasted?
That truly is so meta, the fact that I messed up on the word syntactic because I was so used to talking about something else. Just like messed up meanings.
Did people roast you in the comments saying, let's normalize using words correctly?
Yeah, normalize using the right word for what you mean.
But yeah, so I just thought this was interesting because like at first you're like, well, you know, like of course, like you can just like put together any combination of words and it's nonsensical. But I feel like there's something very like particular about this sentence, like colorless and green, like something can't be colorless and green at the same time. And then, like ideas can't sleep and like sleeping furiously, like that's just like an oxymoron. So it's just like impossible, right? But of course, people out of spite have tried to create meaning out of this nonsense. In Spanish, green can mean newly formed and sleep can be used as a verb of non-expression. So under this context, the meaning is newly formed bland ideas are inexpressible in an infuriating way. Which is like, that's more like, comprehensible.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. Like when you say like, oh, big things coming, what you should say is like, oh yeah, all my colorless green ideas are simply sleeping furiously, but hibernation's over. Just you wait.
Yeah, if you think you live in a John Green novel, instead of saying big things coming on your Instagram, you should say colorless green ideas sleep furiously. And then not marry the first girl who DMs you. And beyond just like people trying to create meaning, there was like even a competition held by Stanford University where people had to make this sentence meaningful, aka normalized context, using less than 100 words. Once again, kind of as like a big F you to Noam Chomsky. I mean, really just like a fun exercise. I would check out the entries. Just Google, you know, colorless green ideas sleep furiously, Stanford University entry. I actually wanted to read the winning entry because it's like, I don't know, it's kind of beautiful. So, thus Adam's Eden plot in far off time, color rampant flowers, trees a myriad green, helped by God's blessed wind and temperate clime, the path to primate knowledge unforeseen. He sleeps in peace at eve with Eve. One apple later, he looks curiously at the gardens of dichromates, in whom colorless green ideas sleep furiously, then rage for birth each morning until doom, bring rainbows they at least perceive. Wow,
I'm gonna do a little golf clap for that one.
Snaps. Yeah, I thought that was really beautiful.
So I have a few more just little tidbits. There's a whole Wikipedia page about this sentence right here. James, while John had a better effect on the teacher. I know what you're thinking. Normalize context. So let me just transport you. We're back into a classroom. You smell the erasers. Your teacher, she's beautiful. She's young. She's in the front of the classroom. And she says, class, there's a one question quiz. Fill in the blank here. John... Mm-hmm. Puts had, and James puts had, but guess who was right? James with had. So let's think about it again. James just got it right because he put had. Ready? James, while John had. Okay, right? John put on his paper.
Yep, I'm had. There with you. I'm here. I'm there.
So James, while John had. Mm-hmm. Had. Right? Okay. James had. And then we have a semicolon. Had a better effect on the teacher. Hajin, are you with me? Like, did that make sense?
I don't know. I you lost me at one of the hads, but
I'll just leave it there. If you didn't get it, you're on your own. Another fun tidbit.
You're not a good teacher.
Another fun tidbit, especially in this TikTok era, is the way that English speakers
we normalize context.
If they have three words in order. It goes I, A, O. And so what I mean by that, it's like tic-tac-toe. That's what sounds natural. And it sounds right to your ears. So it's like tick-tock, not tock-tick. It's ding-dong, not dong-ding. King-kong, not kong-king. And the reason for that is not known very well, but it shows up all the time. Like horses going clip-clop. There's tip-top, flip-flop,
flip-flop.
Lip gloss, Rick Ross, crisscross.
Oh, lip gloss, Rick Ross.
King Kong, pink.
Well,
ping pong,
okay. Well,
mishmash.
There's a bit of
splish splash.
Don't you think that maybe it's just statistical? Like we've just like heard it so many times in that way that it just is what feels right.
That's definitely possible, and there's also a theory that it's easier for your mouth to go like, eh, ah, oh. Like how cats go meow, like that shape of your mouth might be more natural. So I think that the etymology of English words is just so, so fun to research. English is, like many languages, a descendant of Latin, but it's in a different league of complexity, especially with its spelling. Various European languages adopted the Latin alphabet, but English got so inconsistent. Basically, there were Anglo-Saxon tribes with Old English in about the 5th century. Viking invasions added Old Norse to the mix. The Norman conquests of the 11th century and the French linguistic takeover happened. And then populations were moving and mixing. And so that is why the phrase, or the, excuse me, O-U-G-H, sometimes it sounds like ah, like thought. Sometimes it sounds like ow, like drought. Sometimes it sounds like uff, like tough, or off in cough, or ooh in through, or oh in though. And it's honestly frustrating. And now it sounds so natural, but it's really interesting to think about how it got that way. So one fun fact, this isn't a major factor in why English has difficult spelling, but I found on the Wikipedia page, English language spelling reform, that typesetters in the 1500s were paid by the line, and therefore they were fond of making words longer. And sometimes they would, if there was an option to add an extra letter in there, they would. Additionally, Bibles were printed in the 1500s by people outside of England who didn't speak English and were used to Dutch. And so then they changed spellings to be more consistent with Dutch, and they added silent H's all over the place, like in ghost, aghast. They also did it for words like gospel, and gossip, but gospel and gossip, those H's have since been removed. Before we let you go, we have one final segment after the break.
Depths of Wikipedia.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Depths of Wikipedia podcast with your hosts Annie Rowarda and Hajin Yu. The main and accompanying theme was composed by Kyle Imperator. For more Depths of Wikipedia content, be sure to follow at Depths of Wikipedia on Instagram and TikTok. And remember, chances are you can get this week's wiki article on a mug at depthsofwikipedia.com. If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe and give us a positive review wherever you heard it. And now your weekly segment.
We have a special guest for our last quiz. I'm very excited to introduce this person. This is Lucas Spain. He is also my boyfriend, and I'm so excited to have him. Welcome, Lucas.
What? You didn't tell me that.
Happy to be here.
How did you guys meet? Is it somehow related to the podcast?
Thanks for the question. Yes, we did. We met because I put something on my story on Depths of Wikipedia that he thought was funny. He slid into the DMs and, you know, it was love.
As the old saying goes, it goes down in the DMs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just it just goes to show all you guys, all you reply guys, if you work hard enough, if you train hard enough, if you put in the hours, you
if
will.
If you don't get red pilled.
Yeah, if you're super based, you will succeed in
shoot your shot,
dream girl. So shoot your shot.
Send that DM. Speaking of pulling yourself up by the bootstraps.
Who remembers George W. Bush? Probably all of us. Feels like a lifetime ago. Right. Well,
yeah,
he's known.
He's that painter, right? He's a painter.
Oh, yeah. Huh? He's an oil painter.
No, you're thinking of Barack Obama.
So Bush was known for misspeaking, and he has a whole Wikipedia page
among
for
other
it.
Things.
I will say that in defense of 43, if someone analyzed everything I said, it would be so much worse than this. But still,
so true.
These are ridiculous.
I don't know if I can ever be on a podcast where there's a sentence that starts with "in defense of 43." I think I might have to leave.
All right, then leave. If we're not all in defense of 43, then what are we doing here?
Okay.
That
okay,
can
okay,
be the I'll, cold open.
I'll suck it up.
No,
I'll
no,
pull
no.
myself up by the
Keep
bootstraps.
Going.
Let's do this.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna say a phrase that Bush said. That's on the Bushism Wikipedia page, and you have to fill in the blank. I think we agree. The past is,
history.
History in the future. Wow, really all over the board.
Oh my gosh.
I think we agree.
Bad, Lucas. Bad answer.
The past is over.
Wow. world.
Groundbreaking, piping hot take. The next one. In Saginaw, Michigan, on September 29, 2000, while attempting to reassure the business community that he does not support tearing down dams, Bush said, "I know the human being and can coexist peacefully."
Beavers.
I'm gonna say fish.
The Michigan Hadjin. Wolverines.
Hadjin. Hadjin, I don't know how you got that one. Yeah, oh I know the God. Human being and fish can coexist
only a
peacefully.
Dumb would get that wrong. I just knew it immediately.
My God, amazing.
Next one. Yesterday, you made note of the lack of my talent when it came to But nevertheless, I want you to know that I with joy. And no question, Liberia has gone through very difficult times.
Invading countries.
Well, I do remember at the White House Correspondents' Dinner of 99 that, I'm sorry, 01. Wait, when was Bush president? One of the Correspondents' 2000. Dinners. 2000. I just flip-flopped. Bush was a great dancer. Okay, but I won't do that. We can cut that part if I get all of them right. Wanted to have a Slumdog Millionaire moment. I'm gonna say speaking.
Yes, so you're both wrong, but the answer is so much better. Yesterday you made note of the lack of my talent when it came to dancing. But nevertheless, I want you to know I danced with joy. And no question, Liberia has gone through very difficult times.
Can we get some context on that? Like, what was... What
Can we was normalize that? Context, please?
Normalize context, George. Sorry, I didn't look into it that deeply. Next one. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to, our country and our people, and neither do we.
Airstrike.
Harm.
Did you know this one? You're right.
Yeah, I remember reading it in the New York Times. Yeah, I was kind of.
Hajin, weren't you like three at the time?
I was reading at a 14th grade level.
14th grade level.
I guess you guys call it a college sophomore, but yeah.
Oh my God.
Lucas, you're really bad at this game. Kind of embarrassing.
You know what, Hajin? I'm fucking sorry, okay?
In January of 2000, just before the New Hampshire primary, Bush challenged the members of the Nashua Chamber of Commerce to imagine themselves as a single mother, quote, working hard to put food on your blank.
Baby.
Your baby's dome. I'm going to one-up you on that, Hajin.
Your baby's dome?
Yeah, just, you know, everyone just drops the food on the baby's head. It's a classic. Where did you say
this? I was thinking a dome, like a little like dome protecting the baby.
Where did you say this was in America?
Nashua Chamber of Commerce. N-A-S-H-U-A.
That's in the office. Holly gets transferred to the Nashua.
It's in New Hampshire.
It's in New Hampshire.
N-H, baby.
Okay, that changes my answer.
Does that change your answer to...
Yeah, working hard to put food on your families. What do they have in New Hampshire? A lot of muskets, you know. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna say, muskets.
East Coast wealth.
Nice guesses, but it's working hard to put food on your family.
Last that's actually one. Pretty close.
Yeah, live free or die. Right?
So true. Next one. You work three jobs. Uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that is that you're doing that.
That's great.
That's really friggin' sick, brother.
Brother.
You guys definitely got like the spirit of the word, not the actual letter of the word.
What?
Uniquely American, isn't it? I mean, that is fantastic that you're doing that.
Gotta love them, man.
Just dub. The best.
Dubbies.
Thank you so much for joining us, Lucas. Before you go, can you tell me about a Wikipedia page that you really like?
Oh, well, I'm happy you asked. Annie, or your, as your name handle says, Anna, if that's really your name.
It is. I've seen.
Yes, I will give you a Wikipedia page that I admire a lot, and I'll try to be quick about it. I was going to tell you about Maurice Flitcroft.
Oh, he's the, I believe he's the audacious hoaxer, is he not?
He is the British golfer and audacious hoaxer. Thank you, Hajin. Yes.
I'm quite familiar.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if you guys know anything about golf, but the whole point of golf is to hit like a really low score. So like, I don't know, like the British Open scores are probably like, you probably want to hit like a 60 or something like that, I would assume. Like that's a good score. But he became notorious after hitting a score of 121 in the qualifying competition for the 1976 Open Championship, the British Open Championship, which was the highest score ever recorded at the Open Championship. Basically, he figured out that if you just said that you are a professional, they would just let you in and you wouldn't have to try out or do anything. And no one had really figured out that that was a loophole, that you could just lie. So he just never really played golf before and maybe hit a couple links and decided to go play at the highest level. But following the 1976 Open, the rules were changed to prevent Flitcroft from ever attempting to enter. But undeterred, he regularly entered the Open and several other golf competitions, either under his own name or under pseudonyms. And I want you to guess, what do you think the pseudonyms he used were? Can you guess? Can you give me one?
Can we have a little context? Can we normalize
context? Sure. One of them, he was inspired by the word paycheck. So he went by Gene Paychecky.
We were supposed to guess that?
Yeah, what the heck?
Okay, come on. Okay, I'll just tell you. So one was Gene Paychecky. The other one was Gerald Hoppy because he loved rabbits. Oh. And the third one was James Bo Jolly. And then the last thing was after his initiation. So then he became like a C-list celebrity in the golf world because he was so bad. But he had the distinction of the Maurice Gerald Flitcroft member guest tournament named at the Blythefield Country Club in where else? In Grand Rapids, Michigan!
So context is that Hajin and I are both from Grand Rapids, Michigan. However, we have somehow never heard of this place.
That is crazy.
By the time they got to the 22nd annual playing, the club had a green. It was all about making it really easy for bad golfers to be good. So the whole tournament, the club had a green with two different holes so that you could basically hit it anywhere and you'd be close to one of them. And then they had another green, which had a monster foot-wide cup, so it was basically impossible to miss while you were putting. And I just thought that was really great and funny that he was a hoaxer.
Audacious.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. We love people who are famously bad. If you listen to the William McGonagall episode about the worst poet of all time, you might remember our fondness for people who are just really confidently terrible. Also, I love that idea of golfing, but when you really can't lose, it's like bumpers.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Exactly, just massive holes.
Love those.
All right, well, is that my time? Am I up? Are you gonna give me the boot?
Yep, we're gonna.
Your time is up. Thank you so much for joining us. And thank you so much for listening to the Depths of Wikipedia podcast. We'll see you next week.
Stay safe.
I won't see you guys next week, but thanks for listening to me for 1 week. Bye.